Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, a weekly web lab where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati cover the punk rockinist, hip-hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half-free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom fiends. Nima de dee. Hi, Nima.
Yeah, I'm going to eat a freedom gordita.
Freedom gordita?
Yeah.
You're going to eat a freedom gordita. So this episode's called Thank You for Not Farting in Afghanistan.
You're welcome, Michael. I've never farted in Afghanistan, have you?
No. I've only farted in, let's see, America, Canada, Mexico, Germany, Ireland, England, Switzerland, Belgium, and France.
You farted in France?
Yes.
Good deal. Good deal. I farted in America, Mexico, and Canada. Now, if you want to know why we're explaining our geographical flatulence.
Explain it.
Well, an article came out. I just read it, and I had actually heard about it earlier in the week. Apparently, officials in Afghanistan are telling American troops that they've banned farting amongst the troops when they're among public or people in Afghanistan or the colleagues that they're quote-unquote training the Afghan people. They shouldn't fart or cuss because the Afghans find it offensive.
Because it'll, you know, make the country less pleasant. We can bomb them back to the Stone Age, but we can't fart while we're doing
right,
it, basically.
Right. Murdering their kids with a robot, that's A-okay. Farting in public, no, sorry.
And what about the comments on this article?
Comments were really upsetting to me. Everybody was really upset about this unjust law about not farting. And okay, yeah. Banning people from farting, okay, that's a silly law. But, I mean, the comments were just so, I guess, racist. There was one guy who said, and these are the quote-unquote people that we're fighting and dying for. I say, let her rip, boys, hoorah, or whatever, semper fi, something like that. It's just like...
Man, that kind of shit bugs me more than a lot of things.
Right, because A, USA, they don't want us there. You know. They don't want us to fight and die for them because we're killing them. I mean, who are we fighting in Afghanistan? We're fighting Afghanis. We're blowing them up. We're blowing them up with robots. They've got Mosin Nagants, and we come in with predator drones and murder families.
Yeah, and it's... Well, didn't you say the kill ratio was like 80 to 1 for... innocents killed versus targets killed over there right now?
I mean, I think that was an early stat. And again, the CIA runs most of the drone program. So all of that is really confidential.
Yeah, there's stats for U.S. military use of drones, but not for CIA use of drones.
Right. And I do believe they run the majority of the drones. There was an independent study out of some investigative group in... from the UK, an investigative journalism outfit. They ran local media reports and did investigating on the ground, you know, from who the locals said died and when and how, and they compared that with the government data. It was a majority. It wasn't something insane like 80 to 1 civilian versus terrorist, but I do believe it was a majority of civilians killed as opposed to quote-unquote terrorist. And even then, the quote-unquote terrorists that were supposedly killed, I mean, these are people who intelligence supposes are terrorists. I mean, these aren't people who've been convicted of any crime, because after all, terrorism is a crime. They're not an army of terrorists with uniforms and a flag saying go terrorists. These are people that supposedly committed a crime of an act of terror and can't assume that they're a bad guy, but that's what the program does. They murder these people, and in the stats, when they call them a terrorist, that doesn't necessarily mean that that person has actually done any terrorism.
You know, another kind of the other end of the same spectrum disgusting thing that I came across this week is the White House has issued a internal press release that I guess got leaked of how American politicians and staff members are supposed to address the upcoming 10th anniversary of the 9/11 bombings and like the bullet points of what to stress and what not to stress and how to be patriotic and how to not be what they don't want you to be.
I'm really interested. And what is the government's take on how they should handle this PR event?
This PR event. Well, I know that one of the things on it was downplaying the word Al-Qaeda, which I think is some really twisted PC thing to try to not
I think it's
Muslims.
Because the Libyan rebels are Al-Qaeda. They're going to move away. It's going to be East Asia. We've always been at war with East Asia.
Because we're now
Eurasia.
Backing part of Al-Qaeda?
Right.
Is that true? The Libyan rebels are Al-Qaeda?
I mean, I don't know if it's true that they're an official outfit of Al-Qaeda, but I know that they have ties. I mean, supposedly the leader is a quote-unquote terrorist. I mean, again, with the caveat of what I just said about people who are quote-unquote terrorists. But, I mean, it's not like these are the supposed freedom fighters that, you know, the American media makes them out to be. It was basically a Libyan civil war, and we backed aside because we wanted to remove Gaddafi, and all the European powers wanted to get in on all the oil and water action, which, of course, they're all divvying up the spoils as we speak.
This is disgusting. Let's move on.
Okay.
You okay with that?
Yeah, we can move
on. You got any closing statements, closing arguments here?
No, I think if the army is going to ban soldiers from doing something in Afghanistan, maybe they should ban soldiers from being in Afghanistan.
Word. So, thank you for not farting in Afghanistan.
You're welcome.
Hey, have you ever seen that movie, Thank You for Smoking?
No, I wanted to.
It's pretty libertarian. You should check it out.
It's about a guy who's sort of the point man or the PR guy for Big Tobacco.
Big Tobacco.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he and two buddies have lunch every week, and the other two are the point man and point woman for gun manufacturers and for booze manufacturers, and they jokingly call themselves the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms.
Nice. Or the Bureau of All Things Fun, the ATF.
Yeah, yeah. It's a good movie. You should check it out.
Yeah, it sounds like it's right up my alley. I really don't watch many movies anymore. I used to watch, you know, quite a few movies. One of my best friends is like obsessed with movies, and he used to always give me all these movies to watch. But my wife, she's not really into the movies, so we don't really end up watching a whole lot.
I watch a lot of movies without my wife when she's asleep, but you and your wife both basically have day jobs around the same time, so you
right.
are up a lot when she's up, right?
Right, and we're newlyweds, yeah. And so usually if we're in the house together, we're either doing something together or we're sitting on the couch together. We call it blogging, but really it's reading stuff on the internet. And I'll blog in toboggan on my iPhone and she'll blog in toboggan on her laptop and we just sit together.
You're reading the same stuff or different stuff?
No. We're reading different things. I'm reading about being a libertarian. She's reading about being a vegetarian.
Do you read interesting things to each other while you're doing it?
We do. We do. In fact, one thing that we just both read together was this story about the $20 gold coin that when Franklin Roosevelt confiscated all the gold, they had these newly minted $20 gold pieces, and some of them got leaked out, and the Secret Service went on this decades-long rampage of trying to find them. And you know,
oh, yeah, I read about that.
Yeah.
It was like some family had eight of them and took them to the government to get them authenticated and got them confiscated.
Right.
And they were worth like $1 million each. And, you know, it's just basically a variation on never talk to the police.
Yeah. And also for my wife, she'd never known that that FDR stole everybody's gold.
Most people don't know that. Most people your age or even my age don't know that unless they're, you know, tinfoil hat libertarian conspiracy nuts like you and me who look up stuff like that.
Well, she was like, why had you never told me? Because they don't teach
anything in school now that's, you know,
that's worthy of knowing
contradictory to their brand of statism,
right.
You know, and FDR is a hero to the Obama administration. So there's no way that they criticize him in public school.
Yeah. Well, it's so crazy looking in hindsight on how truly biased my school history textbook was. And not only that, but then you take the test and you have to spit back out those biased answers. And those are the right answers. If you don't answer that the Great Depression was fixed by World War II, then you get that question wrong.
Yeah, when which is the wrong answer.
Obviously,
really.
It's the wrong answer. My wife was like, you never told me that FDR stole everybody's gold. And I was like, yuh-huh, because I know I have. But I think sometimes she tunes me out when I'm going on and on and on. Because we had bought gold recently, and she was worried about something happening. She had this daunting fear that the government could do something bad if we bought gold. And she was like, that makes sense that I had that fear. And I'm like, yeah, well.
You know, there was a good Tyranny Today recently.
The Nima News with Nima Vidati.
And now for your daily dose of nanny statism in our daily segment, Tyranny Today.
Tyranny Today.
Part of the federal government is going after guitar owners. Did you read about this?
Yeah, that was ridiculous.
And, you know, it's kind of like the hippies and the lefties generally think the government is good when Democrats are in office until it affects them personally. And I'm wondering what's going to be the fallout from this. It's basically the EPA is going after guitar manufacturers, specifically Gibson, you know, raided their six of their factories with guns drawn to confiscate wood, basically blood wood, which is the equivalent of blood diamonds. It's wood that's made in a conflict zone and people die over it or whatever. But
I even think that's a loaded term. I wouldn't call it blood wood.
Yeah.
I'd call it rare hardwood. Basically the ebony or ivory that's on your piano key or in your guitar fret.
Yeah, or like Brazilian rosewood inlays. A lot of woods are used to make quality guitars that are really rare and are from all over the world. Right. And the EPA just wants to fuck with commerce and is, you know, they confiscated all this stuff. And Gibson had certificates from this respected independent board that monitors, you know, it's, I don't know what it's called, but it's basically the anti-blood timber board that had certified that the wood they have was not from conflict zones.
Right, so they even jumped through all the hoops. Even though the hoops are silly, they jumped through them.
Yeah, and they still got it confiscated and taken away. And it's to the point where they may actually be confiscating existing antique acoustic guitars from people that contain these woods. Like, there are guitarists saying now, like, usually when I go tour Europe, I always take my 1920 Martin acoustic six-string guitar with me, but I'm not going to take it anymore because I don't have paperwork proving where the wood in it's from,
right.
And customs will take my guitar.
Right. And that was my understanding, too. It's not like they're going to go to your home in California and take the stoner's guitar, but if you travel, you know, at customs, they can confiscate it. They can demand the paperwork. There was a guy who had a bunch of antique pianos, actually, in the article that I read on this this Gibson raid. He didn't have the right paperwork, and they were obviously grandfathered in. Like, everybody knew he was allowed to have these pianos, and what they did was they ended up convincing him to plead guilty to it and pay them $75,000, and then they let him on his way.
Ugh.
So, I mean, it's just like everything we see these days. It's a big extortion racket. It's either to protect the established interest or it's to just straight up extort money out of people.
I think it's horrible, but I also think it's good in a way because the more different types of people get tyrannized for no reason, the more people may wake up.
Right. I think that is the silver lining. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of acoustic musicians. You probably don't.
No.
You and your damn hip-hop and your computers and your drum machines. But, you know, I know a lot of semi-professional and professional musicians who own $15,000 mandolins and guitars from the 20s or the turn of the century. And I'll tell you, they look at guitars like we look at guns.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like, you're not going to fucking take this away from me. This is, you know, it's more important to them than their house or their wife or their cat or their child. I mean, that may be a slight exaggeration.
Well, it's their livelihood. And to a musician's ear, tone can be so specific and so shaped to what it's coming out of and the material that you use. And that's their absolute human right to make that tone however it pleases them as long as they're not hurting anybody else. And I don't understand how having wood hurts anybody.
Having wood doesn't hurt anybody.
That's a bumper sticker.
It took me a second, but DJ is playing with Fuzzy. She's pointing her finger at Fuzzy. They're like fighting without touching each other. Like, Fuzzy's batting at her finger. He wants her ice cream.
Right, right. This isn't a music thing. DJ is Michael's wife and Fuzzy is Michael's cat.
Yeah, it's not a music thing. So anyway, the government's taking guitars away at gunpoint and putting them in that warehouse at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark. That warehouse is my friend Blaine's, like, analogy for anything that just gets stuffed away somewhere. Like, DJ and I did this job for him. It was, like, paid, like, $3,000 and took months of part-time work of doing. It was basically recording DJ doing voiceover for a SAT prep program that he was preparing for somebody else.
Oh, cool.
We did it, and then he made the video for it and put it all together. And it was an immense amount of work that, you know, we got $3,000. He probably got $10,000. And I asked him the other day, like, so did that ever come out? I'd love to see it. And he's like, nah, that company got sold to another company, which got sold to another company. And all that media I did for them, I got paid for it, but it's all in the warehouse at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
I never saw Raiders of the Lost Ark, but that's just full of imagery for me anyway.
Well, basically the premise of it is it's all the MacGuffin. Do you know the term MacGuffin?
No.
MacGuffin is a movie term for the thing in the movie that everyone's chasing, the physical object, okay, you know, okay. The talisman.
Right, right.
Like you've seen Pulp Fiction,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
It's the briefcase that has the glowing whatever, and you never even know what's in it. That's the MacGuffin.
Okay.
So the MacGuffin in Raiders of the Lost Ark is the Lost Ark, which is the box that the Ten Commandments...
The Ark of the Covenant?
The Ark of the Covenant.
Okay.
But it was what the Ten Commandments were in, right? Yeah. It's what, you know, God gave this to Moses in this box, and the tablets are long gone, but the box is rumored to exist and have whoever owns it has supernatural powers over all mankind. And Hitler was trying to get it in this movie. It takes place in the time of Hitler's rise.
Okay. Okay.
And this American mild-mannered archaeology professor by day and dashing man of mystery by night, played by
Harrison Ford.
Harrison Ford. Yeah. Is chasing around shooting Arabs and running around the Middle East trying to find this thing. And at the end, he finds it, and then the U.S. government comes in with all their guns and takes it away from him. And the last scene of the movie is it being wheeled on a pallet into this warehouse, and the camera pulls back, and like the warehouse just goes on for like a mile, and it's nothing but boxes.
Okay, it's everything the government has confiscated.
Yeah, it's like this most sacred thing in the existence of the universe to a lot of people.
Yeah.
Just ends up getting taken by the government and put in a fucking warehouse. So that'll we can use that analogy. The warehouse at the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
And it's surrounded by a moat of raw milk.
Yes. And young men just out of high school with 223 machine guns.
Right, right. Well, back to the whole government confiscating thing and you seeing a silver lining in it. I mean, it is really interesting to me that, you know, under this Obama administration, I feel like federal militarized raids on everybody has increased. I mean, maybe I wasn't, you know, as into following the news and you know, being a libertarian activist back during the Bush years, although that's when I started, but I don't remember during the Bush years Amish farmers getting raided. I don't remember.
Actually, that goes back way before Bush. It goes back way before Bush, but it's all happening more now. And there's the internet, so and 24-hour news cycle,
right,
so we
right.
know about it more. But there's actually this movie. I don't know if we talked about it. It's called, I think it's called something like The Magnificent Bread Machine or The Amazing Bread Machine. It's made in like 1970, like a documentary done on film. It's like an hour long. And it's basically an anarcho-capitalist libertarian movie made by a filmmaker and some college professors. And it's really good. And that one of the first scenes in it is, it wasn't about milk, but it was Amish having their land confiscated for not paying the taxes on it, and they weren't paying the taxes because it was against their religion.
Wow, I should be Amish.
It's a really good
movie. I guess you're right. And, you know, in our movie, we have the video of the Fed goons pounding liquor barrels with axes and pouring them out into the street. And so during Prohibition, there's always been banning.
But, you know, really, it's kind of counterproductive to being a statist, I think, for them to keep doing that, because I think their real goals are control and money. But really, if their main goal was money, they should just let people flourish and do whatever the fuck they want and tax the hell out of them.
Yeah.
That would make more sense.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a balance that they toe, and I think they're getting a little bit too much on the controlling side. But if they let everybody be free and make money and don't remind us all who's in charge, then we forget about why we need them, and because we don't need them. And we remember that, hey, why am I paying taxes? This is ridiculous. So they have to show us that if you break the law, no matter what it is, no matter how ridiculous it is, we're going to come raid you with fully automatic weapons in force to where you couldn't even defend yourself.
I think part of their problem is that they're too big to even know what they're doing. You know, there's this thing I've heard that dinosaurs were so big and had such a small brain that a common thing for a dinosaur would be to be chewing on his tail and eating it and not knowing he was doing it because his brain was so small.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like that's how the government is. It's like so big and so tentacled and so dumb in a lot of ways that it's like, it just seems like they have counterproductive agendas. You know, another thing I heard recently was like during this whole hurricane thing last week, I was watching a guy from FEMA on network TV giving a press conference right before the hurricane hit, telling people what to buy to stockpile, you know, batteries, food, dry food, water, first aid kit, flashlights, radio, etc. You know, basically telling them to go out and prep when it's really too late.
Yeah.
But, and also saying, you know, for people that aren't in the hurricane's path, go out and do this anyway. The same week, I saw this internal memo leaked that was from somebody. Let me look it up. I think it was DHS. And it was like basically saying, if you own a store and you see people stockpiling these items, report them to us because they might be terrorists. And it's like the same shit on the list that this guy was telling people to go out and get.
Yeah.
Okay. It's like, what do you want us to do, man? Make up your mind.
Yeah.
So, you had comments, sir?
No, I'm ready to move on if you are.
Cool. I have a correction. David Crow pointed out that I completely was dyslexic when we were talking about Edison and Tesla and AC and DC. If you go back and listen to that episode, just switch the word AC and DC and it'll be right.
Okay. Fair enough.
Hey, Nima, have you ever seen a parking meter in Wyoming?
A parking meter in Wyoming? Can't say that I have, no. No.
I can't say that I have either, and it took me 2 years to notice that. And you never noticed it, huh?
No, I never saw a parking meter in Wyoming. I mean...
You ever lived anywhere that doesn't have parking meters?
You know, I don't think there's any here where I'm at right now.
Huh. In your town?
In any of the so-called tri-cities. I haven't seen a...
There's some in your state, though, I know that.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure there is in Seattle. Probably Spokane.
But that's pretty cool that it's like they don't have these parking... these taxation at the barrel of a gun robots everywhere.
Well,
like
you guys do places. Have a meter maid. I've met him. I don't know if he still does it, but you have a little guy that drives around in a gator and writes people tickets if they're parked wrong. I mean, you do have some signs that say, you know, 30-minute loading zone, yada yada. And he'll write you a ticket. And I talked to him. When was it? It was when Obama did something that Obama hadn't done before. I forget what it was, but I was supposed to go out and get some man on the street interviews. And this meter maid went on to me on and on and on about how he hates the government. And he was a meter maid. He was talking about how the government shouldn't take money. And I'm like,
some people say that's contradictory, but it's like, you know, one of my heroes is the fictitious character Ron Swanson, and he's a government employee. And it's like, yeah. I kind of wish there were more government employees that saw the ridiculousness of government.
That's true, I guess.
Yeah. Maybe the reason Wyoming doesn't have parking meters isn't that it's so much less of a status place and more just they don't know how to make the technology here work.
I don't think that's it. I don't know what it is. I just think you don't have a need for them. I mean, downtown is what, one street, basically? Downtown Casper?
You know, San Francisco makes a lot of their money on... parking. There's something like 200,000 cars a day in San Francisco more than there are legal parking spaces.
Wow.
Might not be that high, but it's like 80,000 or it's a lot of damn cars.
Yeah. Well, I remember when I went to University of Texas, one of the, I think the first journalism story I ever wrote was about our horrible parking situation at the University of Texas. And there were 700 C parking spots, but each year they would issue around 7,000 C parking permits. And, you know, it's a school, so class is only on. I mean, the main hours of class are always, you know, around the same time. And there would be people getting into fights over parking spots. I eventually got smart and I would drive down to where people would be walking on the street looking like they were going towards their car, and I'd give them rides to their car in exchange for their spot. So if you got creative, you could find a space. But I got so many parking tickets when I went to college, I probably paid at least $1,000 in parking tickets. Got my car booted a couple times as well.
Heinous unit squad stories.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I call law and order. I said it wrong last week, but it's heinous unit squad stories.
In the criminal justice system, sexually based offenses are considered especially heinous. In New York City, the dedicated detectives who investigate these vicious felonies are members of an elite
squad
known as the Special Victims
Unit.
These are their stories.
Heinous Unit Squad.
It works.
Sounds kind of gross. Like you got a heinous unit.
I know.
But I guess it is kind of
and
gross.
Stories about the Heinous Unit Squad.
Correct.
So I got a sort of a freedom fix, but it's a half-assed one. It's
freedom fix.
Fast and Furious fallout. ATF boss resigned. U.S. attorney losing job.
That's good. I think that's a freedom fix.
It's really not, though. It is in a way. And we talked about this before the mainstream media ever did about Operation Fast and Furious.
Right.
But the, you know, the thing of... I'm not even going to explain it. I'll link it on the cast. We've explained it on the last four casts. But it's not really a freedom fix, though, because it's like one guy just got moved to a different government job. The other guy got fired and will probably get rehired. You know, like at Ruby Ridge, they fired a bunch of the people involved that murdered people and then just hired them back 6 months later quietly.
So you're expecting it's just going to be a shell game like normal?
Yeah.
Like when a cop does horrible things and he just leaves the squad or gets fired and he goes to a smaller town to be a cop?
He goes to Lander, yeah.
He probably goes to Riverton.
Riverton, there you go. You know, but it's basically a great new job. Gets a new job for orchestrating murder.
Allegedly.
Yeah, okay. So maybe it's not a freedom fix. But at least we got to play the jingle.
No, we'll play the jingle for this. Court upholds citizens' right to film cops.
Freedom fix.
Freedom fix. I did hear about that, and that is
in Massachusetts.
That is great news. And I also heard that in the decision, their writings were basically like, "Duh, this is established. This is a First Amendment right. How could you not
know
this?"
It's established by the Supreme Court.
Yeah,
the Supreme Court already established it, but for some reason, there were three states ignoring it, and you know, one of them had to rule on it. It was established by the Supreme Court. The explanation was, and this kind of makes sense, is that either side, the cop or the person they're
allegedly
beating, can subpoena the tapes as evidence.
Yeah. Whenever you hear these stories about cops keeping people from filming them, it irks me so much because it so obviously turns on the head the way it's supposed to be. And I know it never was and never will be this way, but theoretically, the cop is a public employee and you, as a taxpayer, are their boss. The authority should be on your side in that situation. You should be able to audit them or ask them questions and get whatever you need out of them. To me, it should be an employee-employer relationship. But if a cop can just, you know, grab your camera, confiscate it, sell it at auction, never give it back to you, or physically use violence to keep himself from being filmed, I mean, that just highlights how ridiculous things have gotten. So kudos to a judge for being so blunt, or I guess it wasn't just one judge. It was an appellate court. But kudos to them for standing up for rights for once.
So we had a really hilarious thing happen to us, which, of course, I found tyrannical things in, and most people probably wouldn't.
A personal story here you got for us?
Yeah, all right. Yeah. Something was beeping in our house, like every... It varied. It was like every 5 minutes to every 6 hours and no rhyme or reason, we'd hear this like chirp and then this robotic female voice saying, "Low battery."
Was it your smoke detector?
We went through the house and we took down every smoke detector and I noticed they were all like 5 years old. So I threw them away. I took them outside, took the batteries out and took them outside of the house. And then we bought new ones tonight and put them up. But before that, I threw out 5 smoke detectors and, you know, I'm looking around and like, I'd hear it. I'd hear it again. It would wake us up. It would like disturb the cats. It was this robotic voice and it went on for like 3 days, you know, and I typed on Google, "Something in my house is beeping." And it's like, I typed "something in my house is," and then the letter B and it auto-filled beeping.
Of course.
And like, you know, 50 other people have blogged about having this problem. And I was checking every electronic device in the house. You know, I was thinking, well, maybe it's my laptop. Maybe it's the cable unit for the TV. Maybe it's the new flat screen we got. Who knows what would have a battery in it and a little robot voice. And I couldn't find it. I'd forget about it. And 8 hours later in the middle of the night, it would do it again. And I'd get up and grab a flashlight and just be obsessively looking all over the house. Like, it kind of got to the point of like, I didn't really care about that it bothered me. It was more like, I'm going to find this.
Yeah, I got to accomplish this mission.
Yeah. And, you know, it was kind of like having a rat or something you couldn't get rid of. It was almost like another entity in the house. And it was after 3 days, I found it. And it was a smoke alarm in the top of a closet under some papers that was like put there by the previous owner. It wasn't like anywhere that it could detect smoke, but I think
somebody
he just
had removed
had
it
an
and
extra
stashed
one.
It in a closet.
Yeah. Okay. And I found it. I was just like virtuous and triumphant and like cheering myself, and DJ was cheering me, and I'd put the trash out and the barrel was out there, and I like went back out and put it in the barrel on the street right. to get it out of our lives.
You know, there's an episode of Modern Family that's almost the exact plot.
Yeah. Is it? It's funny.
It ends up his son, the last time they changed the smoke alarms, his son just threw them all in the closet. And so he was going through changing all the batteries and couldn't realize what happened. And finds him in the closet.
Yeah, it was horrible. Yeah. You know, it started me thinking about, like, people want to move to, you know, smart houses and greenhouses and wired houses and USB-enabled everything. And it's like, I like electronic stuff, but I don't want it to be too smart, you know?
I don't want it to be annoying. One of the things I hate the most, and there is tyranny involved here, is cars that beep when you don't plug in your seatbelt. And there are some cars that won't stop. I mean, I have my car will beep a couple times, but I think it's usually American cars that are worse about this. But I've driven a Jeep Liberty, and it would not stop ever if you didn't plug in your seatbelt. It was the most annoying thing in the world. And it's like, if I don't want to wear my seatbelt, let me not wear my f***ing seatbelt. My car is going to tell me. My car is going to be the voice of reason here. How ridiculous is that? And I'm sure it's some regulation or in anticipation of some future regulation. And it's just makes me sick.
You know, our car has a quality addition, which I would call a bug. You know, a feature that I would call a bug. Of if you disconnect the battery and then reconnect it, the horn just goes off forever.
Ugh.
And it's an anti-theft thing for the battery.
Right.
And there's like a special key that comes with the car to turn it off. But we didn't know that. And when DJ bought it, it didn't have that key. And I was downtown one day and the car died. And I was like next to the parking lot of an AutoZone. And they lend you tools too.
Yeah.
So I was just going to fix it myself. It was actually the alternator. It wasn't charging well. But I could have started it back up and driven it. But I tried to fix it. I opened up the hood. I disconnected the battery. Looked at some things. Reconnected the battery. And the fucking horn went off. And I was like, well, maybe when I start it, it'll go off. And I started it up. The car started, but it just kept beeping and beeping and beeping. And then I had trouble starting it again. And it was like, I drove a little ways. And I was like, I just called a tow truck. I took it to, got it fixed.
Do you remember what kind of car it was?
Turn off. It's a.
Yep. Yeah, a GM car. That makes sense.
Yeah, and I'm going to beep that out because I don't want anyone to know what kind of car we drive. I like to be anonymous, but it's a GM car.
You'll keep the part about me calling it a GM car, though. Fair enough. Government Motors.
Government Motors. There you go. So it was that was my smoke alarm story.
Fair enough.
So do you know what oppositional defiant disorder is?
Oppositional defiant disorder. It sounds like something some state shrink made up to give as a disease for people who are libertarians.
Exactly. It's in the DSM. And
is
it's
it
like,
really?
You know, it's a recognized medical condition.
And it's all about succumbing to authority and bowing your knee.
It's basically, but it's like, you know, kids that are just really defiant in school, they define them as this and then prescribe drugs to them because they don't like authority.
Of course. Wow. Well, what kind of drugs do they prescribe? Is there a specific medication? Are we going to start seeing commercials for it? Does your kid question authority?
Yeah. Compliatrin, I think it's called. Compliatrin.
Nice.
I made that up, but I like
it. Yeah. Maybe that should be the episode or the name of the episode. Compliatrin.
Compliatrin. Yeah. So, do you know what the Rosetta Stone is?
You're talking about the software that is supposed to...
No. The thing that's named after. It's an actual tablet.
Oh, okay.
Stone
and
tablet.
It supposedly has... It's supposed to have a bunch of ancient languages, and it was used as a key for translating.
Yeah. It has the same thing in three different ancient languages, and it was... Scholars knew one of the languages and used it to decode the other languages.
Okay.
That's common knowledge. The thing that's not common knowledge about it is... Its reason for existence was taxes.
So are you saying that that's what those words actually say?
Yeah.
If you had an empire say, this was supposed to help you to compel taxes of different citizens who spoke and wrote in different languages.
It was something made to be read to the serfs, the people, the commoners. The king said so. You know.
Wow. Honestly, that doesn't surprise me.
Yeah, it was for the tax collector.
So perhaps one of the earliest artifacts of tyranny that we still have?
One of the earliest artifacts we still have, you know, of written language right. is a taxation certificate.
Horrible. The ancient Michelle Bachmann
wrote it. The Egyptians invented taxation, but the Persians perfected it, and they were the second people to have it. So thanks, man.
Hey, don't blame me.
I know. Isn't that funny when, like, I remember traveling Europe in 2005 with my movie, DIY or Die, showing it places, and it was when Bush was, like, being really, really hated for the war.
Right.
In Europe, he was really hated, and it was like, I got verbally attacked for being American by
wow.
people. I had a friend that went over there around the same time, and he sewed a Canadian flag on his backpack so people wouldn't hassle him.
You know what I want? That brings up a good question. Where are all the anti-war French now that France has, you know, basically invaded Libya?
I don't know.
Where are they? I mean, where's the anti-war left in America? They're all praising Mr. Obama like he's some walking god.
But I thought of another way that the government personifies itself, going back to a previous cast.
Yes, another one of our government personifications. What do you got?
Cops and judges calling people son.
Ugh. Because they're personifying themselves as your father. Yeah, that is the worst.
Yep. I've heard so many judges and cops call people son when they're talking down to them.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of like saying boy, but without the racial overtone.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Boy.
Well, see, and I grew up in Texas, and, you know, it was also a football coach thing, which I didn't mind at all. I mean, I've always hated authority and structure, but I volunteered to be on the football team. I wanted to play football, and so I'm going to accept their authority. So when they call me son, it doesn't bug me. But when an officer of the law calls you son, I mean, that just goes back to what we were talking earlier about the upside-down relationship there. I mean, why should the authority
come
from
them? Well, a lot of people, we do things that would seem contradictory to some people. I mean, I totally understand how you can be anti-authority, but you loved football because it was voluntary.
Right.
You know, and it was structure that you wanted and you liked and you participated in it. And it's, you know, I'm a really peace-loving, anti-war guy, but I love guns and I carry a gun. And a lot of people can't wrap their head around that.
Yeah, because they're idiots. No offense.
You know, I mean, the last thing I'd want to do is hurt somebody.
Yeah, me too.
But I carry a gun to shoot people if they try to hurt me.
Yeah, but again, it's the last thing you'd want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and like we said before, I mean, in essence, if you did shoot somebody in self-defense, you prevented an act of violence. You didn't commit an act of violence. You prevented one. You kept an act of violence from occurring.
Yep. So let's talk about audio and video.
Okay.
So we got several comments from people who said that our last cast sounded better than the other casts, like the audio quality
of it. The audio quality. You know, the only thing I did different is I was speaking to you on the phone instead of on the computer on Skype.
Which does not affect the recording
of
it. But it may affect how you hear it.
It might affect background noise because, you know, if I have the laptop close to me and it's got its own fan, it could hum and create a little extra background noise.
There you go.
I don't really think that's it. Something on your end change?
A little bit. Of a few things I could think of was one is I usually cast in my room in front of my computer. My computer is quieter than your computer, but it probably does add, you know, there is a fan in it. There is a hard drive in it. But I'm in the living room instead of in my bedroom where my office is. And the living room, it's kind of like a recording studio. You know, recording studios always have a mixture of like reflective wooden walls and then a lot of carpeting and couches and things.
Absorbent
and
stuff.
And that's more like what this room is.
Yeah.
And this room's bigger, you know, so it's got a good combination of absorbent and reflective materials. And then, let's see, what else? DJ was in the room last cast and is in the room this cast, lying on the other couch reading. And I'm usually in my room and she's not in the same room. You know, she's out here reading. She likes to read in the evening. So I think I kind of play off that she likes listening to me talk about Liberty and stuff and having fun with my friend Nima. And also the cats tend to hang out in here, so you get to hear them in the background, and they're playful, and it's kind of fun, kind of entertains me. Oh, they're biting each other now.
So the change in atmosphere, you think, is what?
Yeah, Peanut's trying to hump his brother.
Gross.
Homo kitties. Anybody who says homosexuality is unnatural has never had pets or lived on a farm.
You know, my wife always talks about our kitties being gay. I think they're just wrestling.
Yeah. No. Peanut jumps on his brother, bites the back of his brother's neck, and then, like, mounts him.
Ah. Okay,
I mean,
okay.
Maybe they're... Nah, he tries to fuck him, and then Fuzzy screams.
Yeah.
Which is funny, because Fuzzy's usually the dominant of the two, but occasionally Peanut gets sexually, you know, rapes his brother.
Yeah, he sucker humps him.
Sucker humps him. That's funny. Let's see, what else did I do different? Well, I was having this problem outputting our movie, which will lead into the glory of our movie getting made. But
that's finally, our freedom fix, yeah, our movie.
But, I know, but I had to download this like codec pack from this company Main Concept and add it. It's supposed to be for Adobe Premiere, but maybe it affects globally like SoundForge and other things and just makes MP3's output better or something.
I can see that. I mean, that might be it.
Yeah. Because I know that some things do affect things globally. Like, for instance, H.264 video that comes out of my high-def camera, I can view it on my computer in Windows Media Player.
Right.
And when I give it to other people, it's audio only with a black screen. And even if they have the latest version of it with all the updates of Windows Media Player. And I finally figured it out. It's because some of the codecs that Adobe Premiere adds
are shared with
affect
Windows
globally
Media.
With everything.
Right. Yeah.
So maybe it was something like that. But I also think it's just we're getting better at talking and I'm getting better at editing. I mean, you said that when you started doing this 27 episodes ago, it was kind of hard and now it's real easy.
Yeah, yeah. Now it just breezes by. I feel like I crack a beer and all of a sudden it's gone.
Yeah. Oh, also, I'm using a different sensor beep now. I used to use one that was 5 kilohertz and it was more annoying. And now when I censor stuff, I use one that's A440 and it's more musical and lower in.
I think that's a totally good call there. I applaud that. I hate high-pitched beeps in any form, especially if they're a sensor beep. I hope that our talk about not being too obtrusive when you censor something helped lead you to that decision.
Yep. So the movie, man. I've been working real hard this week on getting the assets to the distributor, MVD, so they can manufacture the DVDs and put it on Netflix and Hulu and a million other places. So basically what that came down to was like doing this output, you know, doing a bunch of different versions of it and finding the one that looked best, putting it on a little hard drive. I bought this really sweet little $20 80 gig hard drive that I'll link because it's a really, if you want a cheap hard drive, I found the cheapest, best, fit-in-your-pocket 80-gig hard drive ever.
Yeah, $20, that's a steal for 80 gigs. I mean, I guess that's how technology works. It's always getting cheaper. I bought a terabyte for $100 like 3 years ago.
I mean, I remember being at a trade show in San Francisco in 1989 or 88, and they had a 1-terabyte drive, and it was the size of a refrigerator, and it cost like $475,000. And I mean, all the geeks were around it like it was, you know, the lost
ark. It was the Ark of the Covenant.
They were worshiping it and trying to touch it and pet it. And, you know, I almost remember that they had armed guards around it, but I don't think they did, but they might as well have.
Right.
There was a velvet rope around it and people were trying to touch it. And it was like lit with stage lighting.
Wow. It was the size of a refrigerator. Yeah. Well, I mean, what, the first computers took up whole rooms.
Whole floors on universities and government. Yeah, and, you know, I was thinking the other day, I was arguing with this guy, not arguing, but this buddy of mine, Michael Woody, that I've known for a really long time, like since 1986 probably. He's a couple years older than me, really smart, like probably a little smarter than me. He watched the Guns N' Weed movie, and he's been listening to Freedom Fiends, and he wrote me, and he was asking me, like, why do you spend so much time worrying and blaming your fellow citizens for everything that's wrong with the world? You know, you're going to get old prematurely doing all this worrying. And the real problem is the corporations. And I replied to him, first of all, I'm not a joyless tinfoil hat curmudgeon.
Yeah.
You know, we may come off as that on here, but
I don't think we come off as curmudgeon-y. I mean, we're lighthearted.
We are, but we do get real serious about, about tyranny. We get pissed off at it. Even though we laugh at it, we do get really pissed off at it. But I don't spend all my waking hours doing that.
Right.
You know, I'm happier than I've ever been. I'm more relaxed than I've ever been. Life's pretty good. I can't complain, but I do anyway, and that's Freedom Fiend. So, and the other thing is, you know, I had to address his, it's the corporations that are the problem. I used to think that way. If you watch my first movie, DIY or Die, How to Survive as an Independent Artist, I was railing on corporations throughout that whole movie.
I think, first of all, if you say that corporations are the problem, that is such an oversimplification. That's like saying people are the problem. People are what's wrong with society.
Well, people are what's wrong with society.
Well, there are, but there's certain, it's more complex than that. There's a certain type of people,
it's the government, man. Corporations can't be evil without the government.
What I mean with corporations is in a lot of businesses, it's the smart thing to do to incorporate. You know, you can have a corporation and it's just what you do because you're trying to keep more of your money from the government.
I can absolutely name corporations that are not evil. Wikipedia is a corporation. It's one of the most useful things that has happened in my lifetime. Apple Computers is a corporation. I don't think they do any evil, and I think they've made everyone's life better and made a lot more wealth in the world. And, you know, some people would argue, well, they have sweatshops in China, but it's like, those are people that, yeah, they're making 20 cents an hour now, but they were making 2 cents an hour working on a farm.
Or they didn't have a job.
Yeah.
And that's a good point. And I think the other point I bring up in counter to this is a corporation is a government entity. It's a legal status.
Right.
It wouldn't exist without a government.
Right.
And the reason that you get these giant evil corporations like, say, Halliburton.
That's what I was going to say, too.
They sleep with the government. They are the government.
Well, Halliburton is basically, you know, the U.S. military is basically an arm of Halliburton in a lot of ways.
Right, and vice versa. There's so much overlap. And so when I think people say the corporations are the problem, that's such an oversimplification. Yeah, corporations are a problem, but it's not the concept of private or voluntary interaction that's the problem. And people, for some reason, tie those two together. Like, they think if you're pro-business or pro-voluntary or pro-free market that all of a sudden, you know, you believe in these evil giant entities called corporations. When in fact, corporations are another form of bureaucracy, and they're enabled by the state.
And you know,
they
people's
are
answers-
a baby of the state.
People's answers to these problems are always more government.
Right. We need government to regulate the corporations.
It's not even a
but
half
measure. In fact,
measure.
What happens...
It's not even a tenth measure. It's going in the wrong direction. You know, government created this thing that's evil, so more government is going to fix it. I mean, that's like f***ing for virginity.
It is totally like f***ing for virginity. And it's silly, and it's, again, it's people not seeing the unseen. It's people only taking... It's people being reactionary and not radical. They're not striking at the root. They don't want to because they don't want enough of a change.
Explain that phrase, strike the root.
Well, that's really, in essence, what radical means. Radical means striking at the root. It means going to the root of the problem, going to the source of the problem.
Now, how can you do that in a nonviolent way?
Education. I mean, it's completely nonviolent to explain things.
We're striking the root right now.
We're completely striking.
We're pissing on the
root. You know, the problem is,
until it dies.
These days, people complain about left and right, and oh, you know, all we have anymore these days are the extreme right and the extreme left, and people shouldn't be extreme. We should all be moderate and get along and compromise. But how does compromising on two things that are pretty wrong going to help anybody?
That's just being polite to a mugger.
It is. It is.
I came up with a really good thing about the problem with left and right. Michelle Bachmann is like the love child of George W. Bush and Hillary Clinton. And, you know, if I said that, like, liberals would get pissed off and, you know, conservatives would get pissed off. But it's really true. She is a cross between George Bush and Hillary Clinton. And I don't just mean because she's a somewhat attractive middle-aged woman. You know, that's not how she's like Hillary Clinton. She's like Hillary Clinton.
Well, how is she like Hillary Clinton? Because I'm not sure. I mean, she's obviously a statist.
Because she's an incredible statist who thinks she knows better than everyone else and defies natural law and the Constitution and wants to, although she's different than Hillary Clinton in that Hillary Clinton comes out and says, I know what's best for you and we need a bunch more regulations. And Michelle Bachmann is, you know, Jon Stewart said it well. She's not Ron Paul is the Tea Party. Michelle Bachmann and Newt Gingrich are moral majorities types with a three-cornered hat.
Yeah.
She's one of these people that says, I want small government, I respect the Constitution, but then wants to do a bunch of shit that's really big government and anti-Constitution, like outlawing gay marriage, like outlawing pot, like...
Outlawing porn. Can you imagine a world without porn?
A world without porn.
I can't.
Maybe that's what we should call this episode. Can you imagine a world without porn? I'm trying to get a little racier with the titles and with the images that I put on here. I mean, I'm not going to put porn on them, but I put a picture of a scantily clad woman on the last one.
Sex sells, right?
With a broken window thing. She's next to a broken window. It was a model next to a broken window, so it works with the title.
I totally agree. It's a good point here is people... on the left are like, oh, well, we want the government to do this and that. And people on the right are like, oh, well, no, that's horrible. The government should instead do this and that. But, I mean, obviously, the answer, the radical solution is, hey, how about the government doesn't do anything?
That's the real compromise. You know, the true compromise is libertarianism or anarchy. Because the left and the right have such diametrically opposed goals that they fucking want by any means necessary, that no one's ever going to be happy. They're both going to be equally unhappy. And really the only thing that would work is to just step away from that and let people do whatever they want to do as long as it's not harming someone else.
I think we're getting closer and closer every day. And I always say I'm a long-term optimist, and I still am. I mean, I don't know if Ron Paul is going to win or whatever, but I am very excited about how well the campaign's doing. I'm very excited about the people that are writing about him and people that are respecting him more and people that are actually saying, okay, well, yeah, he may be radical, but maybe something radical is necessary right now.
Speaking of radical, that noise, I don't know if you heard it, but I'm sure my mic picked it up. It was
I heard a tink.
Yeah, it was a flagpole being knocked over. It was our cat Peanut launching vertically about a foot and a half in the air. It was pretty awesome. He was in the closet, coming out of the closet, which he needs to do, and his brother came up and just whacked him whacked him in the head with his paw, and Peanut was surprised and literally just launched about 18 inches straight up and then came back down and hit the flagpole.
You have a flagpole inside your house?
I have a bunch of flags in my closet because I don't put flags up anymore. I have an American flag and a Wyoming flag and a Don't Tread on Me flag. And I don't put the American or the Wyoming one up because I'm not patriotic in any way anymore. And I don't put the Don't Tread on Me one up because I don't want to make waves, which some people would say is crazy. I mean, I make waves all the time, but it's globally, you know.
You don't want to make waves where you live.
Yeah.
You don't want to shit where you eat.
Yeah, I don't want my neighbors and the cops in this town thinking I'm one of those radicals, you know, because I'm not. I'm not that kind of radical. But, I mean, the government has been issuing internal memos that have been leaked that basically say if you have that flag or a Ron Paul sticker, they should pull you over and search you because you're probably trying to blow something up.
Probably have drugs and a prostitute with you.
You're driving down the highway at 90 miles an hour in an unregistered car, getting a Hummer from an unmarried tranny hooker, cursing God, smoking a joint, and firing your guns in the air, right, driving with your feet.
With a heroin enema up your ass.
That's what libertarians do, a heroin enema. Yeah.
What would you think about an anarchy flag? Do they make anarchy flags?
There's the Circle A. Well, there's the black flag.
Okay.
You know, a black flag, completely black flag, is an anarchy flag. But, you know, the band Black Flag is named after them, which is kind of ironic because their singer is kind of a real Democrat-supporting statist now who also supports the Southern Poverty Law Center.
Yeah, I think you've touched on this before.
You know, if you asked him about that, I'm sure he'd say, well, I grew up, you know, or something like that. But
really, it's now that type of people are in power, they all of a sudden get it. Oh, okay, we can use all this power to get what we want.
Henry Rollins is an extremely intelligent person. I've read a lot of what he's done. I've interviewed him. I've talked to him. I've been in his office and sat and talked to him for 2 hours. And he is an extremely intelligent person, which really surprises me that he's so, like, gung-ho, Obama, the government, you know. It's weird.
Was somebody scratching his back?
What do you mean?
I mean, is he so pro-Obama because he's getting some kind of fringe benefit from it?
I really doubt it. He's got too much integrity to ever do something like that. I'm sure it's a long thought out, deep personal decision that probably, from some things I've heard him say, are probably more about being against Republicans than being pro everything Democrats do. But that's how,
right.
I mean, that's how I thought when I was a kid. It was like, I called myself a Democrat because I hated Republicans, you know?
Right. Well, it's divide and conquer. Against.
I didn't know what I was for.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what the whole establishment is about. Get half of the country to be one team and half of the country to be other, and you won't ever have to worry about them coming after the man behind the curtain because they're going to be too busy going at each other's throat.
And, you know, I really think it evolved out of, like, a perversion of the idea of checks and balances.
Yeah.
You know, and to play minarchist for a minute, the way that the Constitution was set up and the Electoral College was set up and the three branches of government were set up, it really was set up to truly be checks and balances to keep anybody from getting too big or having too much power. And it's just been so perverted to the point where everybody has way more power and is demanding way more at the same time. I was thinking about unions the other day, and they're like, a lot of unions have basically finally come out as being socialist. I mean, that was kind of like hidden for a long time, like, oh, we're patriotic American, blah, 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 blah. But I mean, the head of, what's the guy that visits Obama a lot? Anyway, one of those big union goon suits, You know, I've seen clips of him.
The SCIU?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen clips of that guy. I think his name's Andy Stern. I don't think he's the head anymore. I think there was some kind of scandal and he went out. But I've seen YouTube videos of him giving a speech somewhere, and it's like, it's socialist in every way you could possibly call it, except saying the word socialism. And it's kind of ironic to me, too, because socialists are generally really anti-capitalism. But the demand for really high wages and really high benefits and all this money, way more than you need to just get by, but to be able to be a consumerist, really seems capitalist to me. You know, it's a contradiction.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, we could talk about unions all day, but I think that's a whole section of a cast there if we're going to get into that.
You know what I want to talk about is logical fallacies.
We can do that.
Because I know you've studied these a little more than me. Like, you know them by name and can identify them when people are using them in debating or trying to get a point across. And there's actually a list I found on the internet of like 80 of them. You know, it's got the red herring. It's got the ad hominem. It's got the Texas sharpshooter fallacy, all these other things.
Oh, I don't know what the Texas sharpshooter one is.
I'll explain it.
That's a pretty great name.
But I was thinking we should maybe start having a weekly segment where we discuss a couple of these and call it Fallacy Today. Fallacy Today! Because this is a good thing.
that sounds pornographic.
Fallacy Today. But it's a good thing for people to learn to be able to identify bullshit when they hear it. And, good. You know, there's also, I said this to DJ and she's like, well, you know, there's the danger of people are going to go back through your podcasts and you guys use them a lot. And I said, we point out that we use them. I mean, I recently said on a cast, Nima, don't make me quote statistics because we're not that kind of a cast. The Texas sharpshooter fallacy is finding patterns where there are none, or finding patterns where they don't necessarily prove your point and claiming they prove your point. And the idea is there's this Texas guy by his barn. He's bored and he just starts shooting at the side of his barn, and he shoots at it all day and puts hundreds of rounds into it. And he's a really bad shot. And after a while, because of the nature of random statistics, there start to emerge two or three places where there are a lot more bullet holes than other places. And so he gets some paint, draws bullseyes around him, and then tells all his friends he's a sharpshooter.
Ah, okay.
And
okay.
It's used a lot of times.
That's a good explanation.
Pseudoscience, like, you know, cancer clusters, like 10 times the normal number of per capita people in an office building will get cancer. And then someone will immediately say, well, it must be something in that building that causes the cancer, where it's not necessarily so, because in incredibly large groups of people or events, random clusters of things that look like intentional patterns do occur. It's the nature of randomness and chaos and statistics.
It's assuming causation when there is none.
Yep. So the other two I wanted to go through are two of the most common ones. You know, ad hominem, we can explain really easily. That's attacking. It means at the man. An ad hominem argument is where
attacking the person, not the ideas. So when Rush Limbaugh calls Ron Paul the crazy uncle that nobody's going to take seriously, and that's the end of the conversation.
Right, right. And all these logical fallacies are used all day, every day, by all the pundits, left and right. I'm watching my cats fight. It's funny.
And politicians.
And
the news media. Normal news media reporters. My stories at my place are full of logical fallacies.
Everybody except Ron Paul, pretty much. You know, he's really...
Right.
I mean, one thing I'll say about him, I don't really like politicians, but we like him as a philosopher. God, these cats are just beating each other up. It's funny. They're playing. You know, basically, animals have an innate need to hunt, and when they don't have something else to hunt, they play hunt each other. But
yeah,
you know, and I'm sure there's people who have cats who get really upset and take their cats to a cat psychiatrist when they or a cat spiritualist and get them drugged when they play fight.
Let's hope not.
So anyway, you know, Ron Paul is like, he's consistent, man. He really is. He doesn't change his tune to get votes.
Yeah, which is refreshing to a lot of people. And I know we've been on his nuts all day, but
yeah.
Oh well,
we love him.
I don't care.
So the other two fallacies I want to talk about are the red herring and the straw man. Do you know the red herring and the straw man?
I'll explain the straw man. You can explain the red herring.
Okay.
Okay, straw man, that's when your opponent sets up a caricature of your argument that's not really your argument and then proceeds to attack that. So if somebody were...
Do you know where the name comes from, though?
Well, I mean, I'm guessing that's it. You know, it's not... You're attacking the straw man.
It comes from military bayonet training. They'd make a scarecrow out of straw and attack it, you know, because they don't want to stab one of their own men. but it's a lot easier to attack a scarecrow with a bayonet than a human who's bobbing and weaving and trying to shoot you, you know?
Okay. See, I didn't know that.
That's one explanation. There's another explanation that allegedly a long time ago, people who were willing to bear false witness in a court of law for pay would hang out in front of the courthouse with a piece of straw sticking out of their shoe.
Huh. I'm more apt to believe the first one. Military bayonet story. But
yep. So go on.
Who knows? It's all
Give me an example of a straw man argument.
The example I was thinking of, and you hear this all the time, is anarchy. So when people bring up anarchy and they attack it, they'll say, oh, well, they want everybody to be murdering each other in the streets and doing all these horrible things and law of the jungle and this and that. When really anarchy, all it means is the lack of a ruler. So in anarchist thought, there is still a sense of law. There's obviously the law of non-aggression, which means we wouldn't want everybody out murdering each other. We wouldn't want it to be the law of the jungle. And so somebody who's a liberal, or say Bill O'Reilly, would explain anarchists as violent people who want everybody to murder each other and rape each other's daughters. And so then somebody who doesn't know sees that and goes, oh, that is wrong. I agree with you instead of the anarchist.
It's easy to slam that, and it's the straw man of the real thing. Another example I heard was of somebody says, I'm in favor of separation of church and state, and here's why, and explains it. And then their opponent says, well, I never knew you were a godless heathen, you know,
right?
Because they're not saying they're a godless heathen. And actually, a lot of religious people are in favor of separation of church and state because they don't want someone else's religion being taught to their kids in the school or something.
Although that's a combo attack because that's ad hominem and strawman at the same time.
Yeah, they blur a lot. So the red herring is basically kind of a straw man on steroids. It's where instead of amplifying and distorting and perverting their argument and then attacking that, you put something else in completely that seems related but isn't, and then attack that. An example I heard was if somebody's arguing that people need to wake up and address global warming, you know, to use something that we probably wouldn't argue, but, you know, okay. If someone's arguing man-made global warming is a big problem, we all need to address it, and their opponent said, well, yes, but really a much bigger problem is nuclear materials in the hands of terrorists. That's what we need to be taking our time with. It's not the same argument. It's a completely unrelated argument, but they're trying to make it seem connected somehow.
Okay.
Where it gets its name was when, you know, a herring's a fish. There's actually no fish called a red herring, but when you pickle fish, it turns red and it smells a lot more. And when they're training scent dogs, what they'll often do is they'll have like, okay, the fox ran down this straight line, and they're trying to train the dog to track the fox. And then they'll have somebody go ahead where the dog can't see and take a red herring, a pickled fish, and drag it diagonally for several hundred yards across the fox's path to try to confuse the dog.
Nice. I'm enjoying the origin or the etymology of the terms more than I am the definitions. I didn't know any of those.
I know. Well, they're good to be able to learn to recognize, too. And I'm sure we've used all of them all the time on here. But so I think we can wrap it up pretty soon. We've covered the Texas sharpshooter fallacy, the red herring, the ad hominem, and the straw man argument. So next week we'll cover some more of the 50 or 80 logical fallacies people tend to use.
Okay. One of my favorites is the syllogism. Put that on the list for next time.
Cool.
All right. Peace. Yeah,
that's it, man. Peace.
All right.
We didn't talk about our movie, actually, but we will do that next week. Movie.
Next week, yes.
Cool, man. Peace.
Hello, Freedom Fiends. It's your boy Dean from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I owe me and that includes endorphins. No one won't ask permission and I won't say please. Freedom fans, one fact that I gotta make clear.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Every Friday night, we'll have an exciting new episode where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vadadi weave their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com. Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them.